friends. I'm Steph Midlock.
And I'm Jude Vase.
Welcome to Atherbeth, a podcast exploring the literary equivalent of your holiday leftovers from Tolkien's Legendarium. This is part two of our look at Tolkien's Letters from Father Christmas. We got through the first part in one sitting, and then there's still a lot more to talk about. So even though it's January for all of you and the holidays have passed and are a distant memory, for us, it's still before Christmas, so you're stuck with us for a little bit longer. So Jude, do you have any corrections?
No, I do not have any corrections, but look on your face says that you are trapped in corrections cul-de-sac.
Oh, I am trying to do a 3-point turn out of here and I can't do it. I don't have the turn radius. It's painful. I made so many mistakes. Man, here's the thing, everybody. When you put yourself out there on the internet, it's easy to make a lot of mistakes. And I just really appreciate everyone being cool about it. So, okay, the biggest one that I'm so embarrassed about that I literally discovered the morning that our episode 17 aired was, okay, I clearly decided during recording that John, who wrote the History of the Hobbit, that his last name was Ratcliffe. No, it's not. It's Ratliff. There's no C in there. Take that C out of there, okay? He's not falling down a cliff. He's just got a lift. So I'm so sorry, John. That is totally on me. I cannot read. And now you all know my secret. So do you have anything to add to that? Ratliff.
Well,
John,
I feel
D.
like
Ratliff.
we have put links to his book, and we have called it like the best book on the development of The Hobbit, like in at least 5 episodes. So I feel we're probably due one biff on his name here. I feel like we've sent him a lot of positive press. We're allowed one biff on that one.
Yeah, if you ever want to call me Bleff instead of Steph, I'm totally fine with that. That is fine. or Quidlock, I'm okay with that too. That's fine. So that's my first one. My second one is a little bit less not terrible. I just wanted to do a little call out to our friend Lambo, who we were talking about him. He's a really cool, awesome guy from Ghana who listens to our podcast. Could not remember his Twitter handle for the life of me last time, so I just wanted to call it out. He's at Lambi Likes It, and he's cool and nice, and thank you so much for listening to our podcast.
Yeah, so, thank you so
thanks,
much.
Man.
We really appreciate all of the engagement that we get on Twitter and in other places, and it's always fun to interact with fans, so we really appreciate all the engagement and all the interactions that we've had.
Yeah, absolutely. And like talking about really great interactions, in last month's episode, I asked if anyone had heard of a certain edition of the Christmas letters in which they came with like envelopes and you could like open the letters and check them out. Can't remember what year it was from, like 1995 or 2005, something with a five. And I said that I couldn't find one on eBay, and I had asked if anybody had seen it. We got two really nice responses. The first one was from Luke Shelton, who's a Tolkien scholar himself. He's on his way to get his PhD. His Twitter handle is at Luke Shelton, and he sent me some wonderful pictures of his American version of that, or his English version. And then we got a really nice second tweet from at Chica_Chub_ME. And they sent us the Japanese version. So that was awesome. So a big thank you to both of you for listening, first of all, but then also for sending those in, because it was awesome to see them. And I'm so jealous.
We'll put links to those tweets in the show notes. So if you want to go take a look at those as well, you can take a look at them.
Yeah, please do. They're awesome photographs. My last thing that I want to say is Jude and I have a lovely friend named James Keane who listens to our podcast. I don't think he has a Twitter, so I won't call it out. But it was my birthday last week, and at my karaoke birthday party, which is not humiliating at all, he totally showed me the Moon Man. Remember we were talking about the McDonald's Moon Man? Okay, the guy is called Mac Tonight, and he was like the late night mascot for McDonald's starting like in the mid 1980s. And apparently, my husband tells me that he not only played the saxophone, but he also played the piano.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just want to put that out there in case anybody else was wondering what the heck we were talking about. Listen, I'm sure there's a lot more things I should be apologizing for. At one point, I think I said one of the bear nephew's names wrong. Whatever, guys. Okay. It's fine. I can own up to my mistakes. But yes, always feel free to let me know. And Jude, let us know if we make a little mistake. We're on Twitter at @AthorBeth_cast. And we just want to, you know, put out the best product we can. So let us know if we're wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well,
we've got many icy paths to tread. So let's begin.
Jumping back in this month to sort of talk about a few extra things to tack on to Tolkien's letters from Father Christmas, right, yeah. Jude? In the last episode, I feel like we sort of convinced ourselves that there are a lot of similarities between the world of Middle-earth and these and the lore that's created in the Father Christmas letters. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I think you presented a fairly compelling case there that there was a lot of overlap in Tolkien's head when he was writing these letters and he was sort of intermingling these little worlds that he was building.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's what I think too. So this time we want to present just a couple other thoughts. We had some wonderful sources that helped me with all this research, which we'll put in the show notes and we'll kind of list them as we go through. So we're going to start today with a discussion of the language development that we see in the Father Christmas letters. Then we're going to talk about how the Father Christmas letters sort of are sometimes used by Tolkien to explain real-world occurrences to his children. And then we're going to finish with the very sort of sweet and sad theme of growing up and partings that are very visceral, I think, in these letters. And they really stood out to me. So
same here. Yeah.
Yeah. So great. Without further ado, let's talk a little bit about language. It's your favorite subject.
In case you didn't get enough of my bullshit the two episodes before, in episodes 15 and 16. Here we go again.
I never get enough of it. I need more. Well, that's my Christmas wish.
If people have listened to 17 episodes of this dumb podcast, clearly they are signed up. So,
well, I mean, and that's great because, you know, we know Tolkien is a big language nerd, loved all that philology stuff. And we see that coming out even in these kind of fun and whimsical letters, don't we?
I love that I knew that he got into the language stuff in these letters. So I was really like counting down as I was starting to read through them. I was like, how long does it take? How long does he get before he starts before he gets on his bullshit with these letters? And I have to admit, I was impressed. He held out longer than I thought he would.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
It took longer than I thought before he started slipping in the Arctic language into these letters.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was really funny that even in these Father Christmas letters, he gets up to his on brand bullshit.
No, it's perfect. It's great. And it is really interesting. And I think, again, it adds that great depth that we have come to know from Tolkien. In a 2017 web article, Dr. Dimitra Fimi wrote that even more Tolkienian, we also get invented languages and alphabets. An elf called Ilbereth, who becomes Father Christmas's secretary, sends the children a Merry Christmas message in Elvish script, which is ostensibly a variation of Tolkien's Tengwar writing system. The same scene in The One Ring in The Lord of the Rings. And the polar bear gives us a sentence in Arctic, a version of Quenya, and introduces us to an alphabet he has devised based on the goblin symbols. So those that quote from her article that's titled J.R.R. Tolkien's Christmas Letters to His Children Bring Echoes of Middle Earth to the North Pole, which was on the Conversation website. Thank you very much. Those are the three things we're going to talk about. We're going to first talk about the Arctic language from Polar Bear. Then we're going to talk just a little bit about the goblin language. And then we'll finish with the elf language of Ilbereth.
Yeah, that's a nice little sort of capsule of the language stuff that is presented here.
Yeah, absolutely. In these letters.
Yeah, it's a real nice summary. That one sentence just kind of nicely lines up all of the ducks for us to cover.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and you, so Jude, you know, you kind of, I think, hit it on the nose a little bit when you were like, when is he going to get into this? So just to remind all of our listeners who maybe either didn't listen to the first one or listened to it forever ago and forgot, but these letters start in 1920. Is that right?
Yeah,
1920 to 1943. That's the span that we're in for these letters. So the first time, I think, unless I'm wrong, the first time that we start hearing about Arctic is in 1929.
Yeah, that's my recollection.
Yeah. So Polar Bear is writing the kind of the first part of this letter. His handwriting is super different from Father Christmas's. Again, you can listen to the audiobook and it's wonderful, but I do encourage you to check out an actual hard copy of the book, because the handwriting is such a pleasure to kind of observe.
Yeah. And it's very much an important part of the visual language of the letters is very much a part of the letters. Like, hearing what is being said is only not even half of the letters. The writing and the way that the letters are composed and laid out and the colors, those are all very much very important to how Tolkien composed these letters. So I can't strongly enough recommend that you actually see them if you can, even if you just get the Kindle edition, which is very good, which is perfectly fine for what we're talking about here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, these letters are written for his children, and the writing, and again, the images that he draws are just wonderful. They really suck you in. I can imagine being a kid and not knowing. He sort of disguised his handwriting, right, when he's writing from all these different characters. So Polar Bear has a very different handwriting from Father Christmas. Father Christmas's handwriting is like really shaky and like an old man, and Polar Bear's is pretty blocky. And what I don't know about you, Jude, but when I looked at it, it really reminded me of sort of dwarven writing.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
With like hard edges, almost like Viking runes in a way.
Yeah. I sort of imagined it was like he was holding a big brush. It was sort of how I saw it.
Absolutely. Yeah, like in his paw, right? And he couldn't really, he's not as dexterous, maybe. Yeah. So in that November 1929 letter, Polar Bear writes, "Father Christmas says my English spelling is not good. I can't help it. We don't speak English here, only Arctic, which you don't know. We also make our letters different. I have made mine like Arctic letters for you to see. We always write," and then he does like a little up arrow kind of emoji, "for T, and a V for you. This is some Arctic language, which means goodbye till I see you next, and I hope it will be soon." And then, Jude, do you want to try reading this sentence for us in Arctic?
Let's see. Mara mesta ani vela tie ento yarato nea?
Oh, that sounds great. And also with you.
Yeah, that's definitely Quenya.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. So let's see. Right. Yeah. Okay. So you're exactly dovetailing what I was about to say. So I went on the Tolkien Gateway website, which is a really excellent website for their entry for Arctic, which we'll put a link to in the show notes. And it even notes that like Arctic is written is actually Quenya. And they state that Tolkien would have developed Quenya already. What do you think, Jude? So we're talking 1929. Of what you know of the language, does that seem correct?
Yeah, I mean, he was a decade or more into Quenya at that point. So he certainly was far enough into Quenya to be able to write stuff like that in it for sure. So
that's really cool. Oh, that reminds me of one of my correction cul-de-sac I should have said, which was, I think I said, so Tolkien, Polar Bear, he says that his real name is Karhu. And I think because we had been talking about the Finnish language right before it, I assumed that that was a Finnish word, but I think I'm wrong. I think it was, it's got to be an Arctic word, right? What do you think, dude?
I don't know.
He shrugged. He doesn't know. Well, anyway, somebody come at me and tell me what you guys think it is. It's Finnish or Arctic. Maybe it's one and the same. And it's pretty cute. Part polar bear spells Arctic like A-R-K-T-I-K. He's got some really interesting spellings.
Yeah.
It's adorable and cute. Well, polar bear, a few years on, polar bear gets kind of interested in the goblin alphabet. And he writes, so in the December 23rd, 1936 letter, he makes a mention that he can't find, quote unquote, that alphabet. And he's going to look for it after Christmas. If you keep going in the letter, he says that he actually found the alphabet key. If you, again, if you check out the actual hard copy of the book or the Kindle version or whatever, you can see this kind of pictographic alphabet that Polar Bear has written out. Have you looked at it, Jude? What do you think of it?
Yeah, this is the one that's based on, if you recall last episode, we talked about Polar Bear getting lost in a cave and finding all of the cave paintings that and drawings that the goblins had made. And Polar Bear devises a language based on, or a writing system based on these goblin runes, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting one. I think it's very funny that Polar Bear gets very excited about this goblin language.
Yeah, I think it, and I wish I had written this into our outline. I didn't write it in, but there's, I don't know if it's in the same letter or if it's in another letter or even if it's before that, but Father Christmas writes to the children and says, oh, don't be fooled by his writing system. He says something, I wish I could remember. It says something like, you read it top to bottom and right to left, or so you read it like in columns rather than in rows. And I thought that was kind of cool. Father's Christmas is kind of giving you a little hint on how to read it. And I'm pretty sure Polar Bear wrote like a little secret message for the children. I swear, I sat with that for a little while and tried to figure it out and was like, all right, I'm over it. So if anyone knows what he said, let me know. My patience was not enough for that. But it's pretty cool. It really reminds me a lot of the text you see the dwarves using in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
So perhaps they got it from Aule. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of it with goblin language. I don't know.
It's kind of goblin-y. It's interesting. Yeah. It's just kind of cool looking. It shows, I think what it really just shows is that Tolkien is, besides from just sort of rebranding his own existing work into the Father Christmas letters, he's also engaging in his usual habits. He's making up new stuff. He's making up a new little writing system for fun to send little messages to the kids through the letters. And this time it's a completely absurd little sort of like runic cipher type thing, but it's very Tolkien to do that. So
maybe a way of like passing on a love of deciphering and codexes and stuff to his kids because he loved it so much. Maybe. Yeah. Who knows?
I think so.
Yeah. There's another character who we meet in 1936. This is Father Christmas's personal secretary. He's an elf named Ilbereth, which I swear to God, that name sounds so much like very many elf names in everything else, right? Am I wrong? I don't know.
Well, it sounds familiar because Elbereth with an E, Elbereth,
yes,
is one of Varda's titles.
Oh, okay.
Elbereth so Gathoniel, I think it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Jude, can I, a quick digression, because it's the holidays and I can do that, or because it's January and I can do that. Did you, when you were in, like, when you and I were in college, like around that time, there was like a really silly, very early YouTube video, or probably YouTube wasn't a thing. It was like an internet video. And it was those guys doing the Lords of the Rhymes. Well, the lords of the rhymes from a far off land and I rock this shit too. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh my God, it's genius. Okay. All right. So anyway, they speak a little Elvish in that. They do like a rap. And that's what you just said is part of what they say, because I remember it from the video. Oh my God, this video cannot be. It's so good. I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes. Please watch it. And somebody else who is old and decrepit, tell me what you think if you remember it.
I'm remembering now, Elbereth with an E is Sindarin as opposed to Quenya, and it means Star Queen. Is that right?
Ooh.
Star Queen? Yeah.
Star Queen? How did you know that's
my... I think that's right.
That's my secret title
it's
for myself.
It's the Silmarillion... It's not the Silmarillion. It's the Sindarin name for Varda.
All right.
And that's when Frodo is... when Frodo is invoking Varda with his little... vial of light to freak out the spider ungoliant, the spider the spider thingy,
Shelob.
I always want to call her ungoliant. She's one of ungoliant's,
that's her daughter, that's,
but
Shelob's her daughter.
He rattles off this invocation of Varda that includes in, but it's in Sindarin, so he calls her Elbereth Gilthoniel.
That is so cool. Is that sort of how, like, the Greek gods and the other gods have the same, they're different names, but they're the same guys?
No, this is just a case, this is just a case of a different language where he's invoking her names in a different language. So in Quenya, her name is Varda, which is, means one thing. But in Sindarin, her name is, Elbereth is the name that she goes by. And one of her titles is Gilthoniel, which means something. I don't remember what. I don't. Sindarin's not my specialty, but I know that.
Sindarin's. Come at us.
Gilthoniel is one
bros.
Of her titles. So.
Come at us, Sindarin bros. That's great, though. That's so helpful and very interesting.
Yep.
anyway, so the following.
Elbereth, probably no relation.
They were cousins. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm also a star queen. Can I be called the Yilber? I don't know. Okay, so moving
Ildebreath.
On. So our good buddy Ildebreath, Ildebreath, gosh darn it, don't you get me off topic. Ildebreath shows up in 1936, but in the next year at the Christmas 1937 letter, Father Christmas describes Ildebreath's linguistic skills, saying he can write several alphabets now. Arctic, Latin, that is ordinary European like you use, Russian, oops, I messed it up, Greek, Russian, runes, and of course, Elvish. So that's kind of a neat little quote. They use a lot of languages up there at the North Pole.
Well, they got a lot of people to talk to.
I guess so. I guess. Later in that same letter, Ildebreath takes over, and he's writing to the kids about Polar Bear. He's and like the goings on. He's, as you pointed out in our last episode, Jude, our buddy Ildebreath throws a lot of shade at Polar Bear, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like a 2-page dunking on Polar Bear.
Oh, no, buddy. Poor buddy. Well, anyway, so Ildebreath in 1937 is writing to the kids. He's talking about the goings on up at the North Pole. And he also writes a line in Elvish. I am going to take a moment and open my book because I don't have my computer book open. My computer book. Who am I? Did you hear that? I sound like an old prospector. So for me, Ildebreath writes... He's describing some pictures that he drew, or that Father Christmas or somebody drew. I don't remember who drew them. Jeez. But he talks a little bit. He says, I hope you can read my writing. I will try to write like dear old Father Christmas, without the trembles. But I cannot do so well. I can write Elvish better. And then he writes a little line of Elvish and writes, that is some, but Father Christmas says... I write even that too spidery, and you could never read it. Love, Ildebreath. So that's not that helpful. But yeah. I was just wondering, Jude, if you could look at the language, and I think this is what Dr. Feamy was referring to as Tengwar, this Elvish. What do you think?
It's reminiscent of Tengwar.
Okay.
So it has a lot of the same shapes, but it could conceivably be a mode of Tengwar, but it doesn't look like... I'm not like fluent or nothing, but the kinds of Tengwar that I can read, like, is like the traditional Quenya mode uses diacritics for vowels in certain ways, which this is not doing. So it isn't a normal kind of, like, traditional kind of Tengwar, but it may very well have been, like, a sort of a shorthand version.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It was probably still in development at this time, right?
Yeah.
To some extent. So that's just a very brief look at, you know, the three little languages that we see being spoken or being written in these letters. I don't know. I think it's kind of indicative of how important language was to Tolkien that he even took the time to include that in these letters.
No, I think it's interesting that he, like I said, I think it's fun that he can't keep his language creation shenanigans out of these letters.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. We can't keep any shit out of these letters. And that is an excellent segue to our next theme, in which we're going to talk about how the letters are sometimes used to explain or at least relate real world occurrences. So what a good transition, Joe Jays.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm very good at this.
It's not his first time. It's at least his 17th time, if not more. Cool. So Tolkien uses the Father Christmas letters to explain why things happen. We see this a few different times. Dr. Feamy, in that web article that I noted above or earlier on, and that we'll put a link to, she kind of notes that myths are added motifs that explain away things that happen in the real world to Tolkien's children. She writes, so broken chocolates can be explained by the polar bear squishing them, and the bright light in the night sky is surely a glimpse of the gigantic Christmas tree at the North Pole.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's cool. It's kind of nifty. A really cool example of this is from a letter dated December 21st, 1927, so a little bit earlier on, in which Father Christmas tells the children that it's like super dark that year. There's no northern lights. He says that he had to hire a comet to do his packing by. And this really struck me because I remembered a really interesting talk that we heard earlier this year, and this is talking around March of 2019, Jude and I and a couple of our friends attended a symposium called Tolkien and Inspiration, a multidisciplinary symposium at the Morgan Library in New York City. And there we heard a really nifty presentation titled Menelmakar and his Shining Belt.
Yeah.
I can't say it. Menelmakar. Did I get it?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, thanks. I bungled it the first time, and then you did it right, so you got there.
Menelmakar and his Shining Belt, J.R.R. Tolkien, the Amateur Astronomer. And this was by Christine Larson, Professor of Astronomy at the Central Connecticut State University. And Professor Larson stated that this comet that Father Christmas mentions in this 1927 letter is a likely reference to a comet called Comet Skillerup. Mistany. Did I say that one right? Maristani. Skillop Maristani, which appeared in November and December of 1927 over Britain and over a lot of the world, actually, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat. I read the Wikipedia article for this comet, and it said that the comet could be seen with the naked eye for about 32 days, and it had a bright yellow appearance caused by emissions from sodium atoms.
Interesting.
Yeah, Tolkien references... the Wikipedia article even says that Tolkien mentions this comet, so maybe it's pretty well known. But again, like, I love the fact that, you know, he's referencing... In this, Father Christmas is referencing the fact that it's really dark, and he's like, I'm just going to hire a comet. And the kids could be like, I could see the comet. I know what he's talking about. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's cute.
I like it. It makes me happy. It's very sweet. There's a couple other, a couple other examples. Dr. Feamy mentioned broken gifts and broken chocolates in a letter dated December 20th, 1926. I guess polar bear, you know, he's always messing up. He set off this humongous explosion of quote unquote monstrous fireworks. This broke the moon into a bunch of pieces and shook the stars out of place. And Father Christmas says, then I found out that the reindeer had broken loose. They were running all over the country, breaking reins and ropes and tossing presents up in the air. They were all packed up to start, you see. Yes, it only happened this morning. It was a sleigh load of chocolate things, which I always send to England early. I hope yours are not too badly damaged. That's pretty cute. I wonder if he, like, broke them on the way home.
Yeah, translation, somebody sat on the box of chocolates in the car and fell out of the bike basket.
But we're going to blame it on Polar Bear.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do this holiday season. I'm just
like
blaming.
I like that he did it like 2 years later, too. He's got another one 2 years later, and he's like, let's blame it on Polar Bear again. Worked it the last time.
Totally. I think you're referring to the one from 1928 where, like, yeah. Polar Bear was carrying a bunch of stuff up the stairs. Listen, yeah. I'm going to step in for Polar Bear here. I think we are all guilty of deciding we can carry every shopping bag in from the car at one time instead of making multiple trips. I know I do this shit all the time.
Yeah.
And it always ends badly. Well, that's what Polar Bear is doing. He's like, I'm carrying all this stuff up the stairs. Fuck you guys. I'm going to do it. And of course, that didn't work out. He totally fell tail over nose and fell all the way down the stairs. And some of the presents got smashed. And Father Christmas is like, I hope none of yours are you. I hope you got none of these by accident. But they probably did. Oh, man. Well, you know, Father Christmas talks about kind of fun, whimsical things like broken presents or comets. But, you know, these letters fall over a very difficult time for a lot of Europe, but for the whole world. This is falling over the time of World War II. So I wanted to mention that this World War II topic comes up a few times throughout the letters.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it really changes the feeling.
He makes varyingly oblique references to it in a few places.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a little. So again, these letters, 1920 to 1943, and a bit of historical context. On September 3rd, 1939, that's when Britain declared war on Germany, and that sort of marks the start of World War II in Europe. So we're right at this time. I want to take a second just to remind the listeners that Tolkien himself fought in World War I, and it affected him greatly. If you're interested in this, you might want to check out our podcast, Atherbeth, Episode 12, A Tale of Two Tolkien Biographies, to hear a little bit more about his time in the war. And yeah. We discuss some really wonderful sources there that go into this a lot. So this was close to home, I think we could say, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure.
Yeah.
It must have been extremely affecting for Tolkien to have survived one of those, well, for his whole generation to have survived one of those wars, and to call it the war to end all war, and then to have another one roll around just as their sons were of age to be fed back into it. That must have, I can't imagine. I can definitely see why he would be. Honestly, it's impressive to me that he references so lightly in these.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe he was trying to not like spoil the holidays with it. We do see, as Jude said a little earlier, he sort of obliquely mentions, he always says this quote unquote horrible war. That's kind of how he talks about it a lot. It's true. It just, you get the sense that the war vexed Father Christmas a lot. It was a big deal for him too.
Yeah. It's interesting the things he, so the first mention in 1939, he just says, he just makes a reference to this owing to this horrible war. And that's like all it says. But then he makes a more direct reference to it in 1940 in the letter to Priscilla. And this one is a little more affecting to me, where he says, we are having a rather difficult time this year. This horrible war is reducing all our stocks. And in so many countries, children are living far from their homes. Polar Bear has had a very busy time trying to get our address list corrected. I am glad you are still at home. And that one's a little messy to me, a little messed up. Just the oblique reference to all these children being evacuated from their homes during the air raids. And I don't know, that's just a really intense reference to me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's really sad. It's a very different tone than a lot of what we've heard from Father Christmas before.
Yeah,
in that same letter from 1940, Father Christmas talks about how these 50 penguins showed up to the North Pole to help him. There was this rumor that Polar Bear and his two cubs had been blown up, which is like, whoa, that's kind of a lot.
Yeah.
And that Father Christmas was captured by goblins. And so these penguin guys like showed up to help. And Father mentions to Priscilla that you might call them evacuees. He said, "What you would call evacuees, I believe. Not a very nice word." I don't know. It just kind of, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but it kind of struck me like perhaps could this be a reference to soldiers or other kinds of war evacuees? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't sure how to parse that either. I read them as being a bit of a nod to soldiers too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my suspicion, though, is that by explicitly calling them evacuees and saying that they're there to help Father Christmas, I did wonder if maybe he was not trying to say that, like, all these kids that I'm sure his children knew who had been evacuated or were, you know, being taken care of and were, you know, useful things were being, they were helping people, or that they were being helped or something like that.
Yeah.
Trying to show that they were being taken care of.
Absolutely.
But it's a grim sort of reminder of what's going on in the world, and that there's these children that are being put into dangerous circumstances.
Yeah. He goes on the next year in 1941 to kind of, he keeps on going with that theme a little bit. Do you want to read the quote that Father Christmas says?
Yeah. "I am so glad you did not forget to write me again this year. The number of children who keep up with me seems to be getting smaller. I expect it is because of this horrible war, and that when it is over, things will improve again, and I shall be busy as ever. But at present, so many people have lost their homes or have left them. Half the world seems in the wrong place."
That's so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's full of emotion.
Yeah. It's just grim.
Referencing
people being separated from their homes, and then also just from the disillusionment, I think, that people are experiencing with the world because of the war. So, it's definitely depressing.
Yeah. Father Christmas kind of brings it back home. You know, in that same letter, he talks about how the goblins are sort of acting up again and being jerks again, and that there were several battles kind of fought around his house. And he thought that he wondered if he would even really get out this year. He's saying, I expect the goblins thought that with so much war going on, that this was a fine chance to recapture the North. So we're seeing our Father Christmas's stores dwindling in the number, and finding children are harder, but there's also this, the goblins are using the war as a distraction to like retake land up near Father Christmas's place. That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
It goes on. So again, we're continuing on through the war years. We're also drawing very close to the end of the letter. So 1942, this is the second to last letter, again, addressed to Priscilla, his daughter. Father Christmas says that the stocks are really low. And he says, "I am hoping that I shall be able to replenish them before long, though there is so much waste and smashing going on that it makes me rather sad and anxious too. Deliveries too are more difficult than ever this year, with damaged houses and houseless people and all the dreadful events going on in your countries." I think I feel like Father Christmas is kind of trying to instill in Priscilla that, like, you may not get what you want this year, right? There's a lot of, I think there's some civic mindedness coming. He's asking her to, like, be a little bit mindful of the situation and and like realize that like everything's messed up and people don't have their homes and like I'm gonna do what I can, but like without all this going on, what can any of us do? Even a magical being, what can they do against war, you know?
Yeah.
And we see that question asked in The Lord of the Rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the very last letter is Christmas 1943. Father Christmas says, "My messengers tell me that people call it grim this year. I think they mean miserable, and so it is, I fear, in many places where I was specially fond of going." And again, it's just another nod to World War II, right?
Yeah.
Like that it's really messing up everything.
Yeah. But I agree with your point that I think he's trying to emphasize to his daughter, like, yes, we're safe here and things like that, but keep in mind the people that are not so safe elsewhere.
Yeah. I think Father Christmas asks that a lot, and that kind of that's a great point. Even before the outbreak of World War II, Tolkien used the letters from Father Christmas as teaching moments, or at least I feel like he did, sometimes to explain why they didn't receive everything that they asked for. There's a letter from 1931, so well before the start of the war, but it references, he says, "Oh, thanks for all the great letters. I love all these letters." And he sort of tells the children that he says, "But if you find that not many of these things you asked for have come, and not perhaps quite as many sometimes, remember that this Christmas all over the world there is a terrible number of poor and starving people. I, and also my green brother, have had to do some collecting of food and clothes, and toys too, for the children whose fathers and mothers and friends cannot give them anything. Sometimes not even dinner. I know yours won't forget you." And we mentioned this quote in our last episode too, but it's so poignant. I wanted to make sure we said it again.
Yeah.
That's such a great teaching moment, right? I mean, do you feel like that's the kind of thing you're going to be teaching your son? Like,
Yeah, no, definitely. I think speaking as someone who comes from a position of privilege, I think that is such an important lesson to teach. And I think you have to kind of take every angle you can to try and hammer that one in, that not taking that privilege for granted. And it definitely reads to me like that is what Tolkien is trying to do there. Tolkien we've talked a lot about his Catholicism and how seriously he took that. And I know that he was very humble about his religion, and I think he was very conscious of the charity aspect of that as well, I suspect. And I sort of suspect that that's what he's trying to emphasize there, is the making sure that others have something as well.
Yeah, and not like looking beyond your own needs to understand that there's other people that have. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was all part of that. Yeah. And I think that's part of his character. You see that in his works a lot, that concern for other people and that consciousness of other people's plights. And I definitely can see him. I could definitely imagine him trying to impress that message on his children.
Yeah, totally. This sort of brings us to the last theme that Jude and I wanted to talk about, which is the theme of growing up. Through these letters, you know, between 1920 and 1943, we have a lot of instances in which Father Christmas, notes the passage of time and the growing up of Tolkien's children, and there's a little bit of sadness kind of mixed in there. That great article that Dr. Femi wrote, that really short but excellent article from 2007, she wrote, "The poignant last letter, when Father Christmas waves goodbye to children who are now too old to hang their stockings anymore, while the Second World War is raging, marks the end of innocence in more than one way. But the myth of Father Christmas lives on and continues to be a festive favorite read of all children all over the world. So I thought that was kind of a, that loss of innocence. That's a nice way to say that.
Yeah.
Father Christmas does seem really sad about the kids growing up and not writing to him anymore. We see a lot of examples in that. Even as early as 1927, Father Christmas mentions that he hasn't heard from John. So John is the oldest son. He was, three in 1920 when Father Christmas started writing his letter. So I feel like the kids grew out of him really fast. I don't know. But he says, Father Christmas writes regarding John, I suppose he is growing too big and won't even hang up his stockings soon. That's so sad.
Aww. No, that's like, what, 10 years old? So that's getting to be the age when some kids are starting to be too cool for Santa.
I know. We said, he definitely says that. So again, even the next year in 1928, Father Christmas mentions that John is growing up and he says, love to Chris, love to Michael, love to John, who must be getting very big as he doesn't write to me anymore. So I simply had to guess paints and I hope they were right. So I guess he was guessing at what John might want for Christmas. So, it's a little bit of guilt. I don't know. Maybe not.
Ribbing him a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, about John in 1931, Father Christmas writes, I'm expecting that John, although now he is over 14, will hang up his stocking for this last time. But I don't forget people, even when they are past stocking age, not until they forget me. So I send love to you all, and especially little PM, so that's Priscilla, who is beginning her stocking days, and I hope they will be happy. So that's really sweet. That's a great, that mentions all the kids.
Yeah.
That's really sweet. I feel like because John's the oldest, he gets a lot of sort of attention as to being the one who doesn't write anymore. In 1932, Father Christmas writes, I dare say John will feel he has got to give up his stockings now and will give way to the many new children that have arrived since he first began to hang his up. But Father Christmas will not forget him. Now that I'm reading this, Jude, now I'm like, oh, do you think he was actually telling John that you're too old now?
No, I think he's teasing John a little bit.
Okay.
My read on this is he's ribbing him a little bit. Like, I suspect John was like, I'm too old for Santa, but is still hanging up his stocking. So he's like giving him a little bit of an elbow, like, oh, you're too old for Santa, but you're still hanging up the stocking for the presents. I see how it is. That was my read on it.
Okay, that's good. I like it. I like it. That makes me feel a little bit better. I just wanted to kind of end with the last letter again to Priscilla in 1943. This is the final letter. All the boys are too old at this point. Father Christmas says that this is the last year that Priscilla will hang up her stocking, and then he will have to say goodbye to her. And I think the quote is really, really sad and sweet. It goes like this. I suppose you will be hanging up your stocking just once more. I hope so. For I still have a few little things for you. After this, I will have to say goodbye, more or less. I mean, I shall not forget you. We always keep the old numbers of our old friends and their letters. And later on, we hope to come back when they've grown up and have houses of their own and children. This has kind of made me feel sad. It's like, he's like, I'm going to leave. I have to say goodbye, but I'm not going to forget you and I'll be back.
Yeah. No, it's sweet. I like that a lot. It's very melancholy, though. I know what you mean.
Yeah. It made me kind of cry a little bit when I was reading the book. I felt a little bit sad at the end.
Yeah.
Aw. Well, I don't know. That's kind of what we wanted to talk about. I just wanted to ask if you have any sort of final thoughts, like why. So we've gone through these Father Christmas letters. And, you know, as I said at the top of the show, you and I are currently in December of 2019. And so I've been reading a lot of people's Twitter comments about the Father Christmas letters because they're kind of in the zeitgeist right now. And I've seen a lot of people say, I've never heard of these before. They're so interesting. I guess I wanted to ask you, now that we've talked about them to death, why do you think it's important to read them when you're reading? They're not really the legendarium, but what do you think?
I think they're valuable to read because for someone who is studying Tolkien, they are a really interesting insight into Tolkien the man.
Yeah.
they depict a, they give you a window into who Tolkien was as a father and how that, that overlapped between Middle-earth and the real world. And I mean, maybe this is just my point of view because I'm a father, but that's very much what I took out of these letters, was that this was like stepping into Tolkien's head as a father. Was seeing, like, yes, I see the Middle-earth stuff, and yes, I see, like, the real-world stuff, but to me it was very much, I read these letters in the sense of, like, how he was writing to them, how he was writing these letters to his children, and what he was, how he was relating to them through these letters, and how he was interacting with them through these letters.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think, like, I'm not a parent. So for me, what really resonated was just the amount of, like, the values. Again, as you say, Tolkien's values as a man, as a person, as, like, a citizen of the planet, that we see throughout the Legendarium, right? These moments of charity or acting selflessly or doing something to save the world, whether it's giving up your presents that year so another kid can have something, yeah, or bringing a ring to Mordor. You get these little, like, wonderful, tasty hints through these Father Christmas letters. And it just makes me feel very warm and fuzzy inside that he was instilling these things in his own kids.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah. I like him a lot.
Yeah. Me too. I would like to have, I would like to watch, like, a really, like, maybe one of the Rankin and Bass, like one of the really bad Lord of the Rings movies with Polar Bear, because as we mentioned in the last episode, Polar Bear throws so much shade into the margins.
Yeah.
I think he'd be really fun for a roast, don't you think?
Yes, for sure. In a more jaded world, in a world without Christopher Tolkien, there is definitely a Rankin Bass Father Christmas special for us to watch.
Oh, no. Oh, like the Star Wars one where it would be like Galadriel's going to sing a song with Chewbacca for some reason. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're mixing that's our an episode we should do.
Man, that's a make a mental note.
All right. We're going to write that down. No, we should do an episode
about Christopher, like the licensing and Christopher Tolkien's role in the Tolkien estate and stuff like that. That would be a fun episode.
That's a great idea.
Especially since he just retired, like that would be an interesting one to sort of a retrospective on his role in the protection of his father's estate and stuff. That'd be an interesting one to
do. We could talk about the like the role playing, the RPG tabletop RPG game, and like the little snafu with the what are those things called? Slot machines. That's the word.
Yeah.
Cool.
Fucks all Zants.
If anybody out there in the Twitterverse, you know, has any great examples of like weird Tolkien licensing, please let us know at @Atherbeth_cast, because that would be cool and we could use it for a future episode. So thanks for doing our homework.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we're at the end of the episode. It's a new year. It's 2020 now for our wonderful listeners.
Jesus Christ.
I can't believe it. There's no flying cars and I'm mad about it. Whatever. Maybe next year. I just want to, I guess just with the dawning of the new year, I just want to thank you, Jude, for another excellent year of Atherbeth. This has been so fun. And
yeah, for sure.
I don't have any New Year's resolutions when it comes to Atherbeth. I mean, you know what? Wait a minute. This is a good moment. And because we're running a little short, I'm going to put this in there. I feel like last year you asked me what I was going to do this year. And I said I was going to like try reading more stuff. And I didn't.
You did.
I would like some mad props. I read The Silmarillion and I read that other one about the Houses of Hador and the guy that did his sister. Come on.
You did. You
I want some more props.
Absolutely did. And not just that. Thanks. You outlined, you basically like fully outlined and owned a couple of these episodes, which was way more than you thought you were going to do for Atherbeth this year.
Oh, yeah. I said I wasn't going to do any homework for this podcast, and now look at me. I love it.
Yeah.
What have you done to me, Jude? Why?
Turning you into a Tolkien scholar yet.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for, you know, for 2019 and kind of helping me, kind of handholding me through it again. I really enjoyed all of our episodes, and I'm personally really looking forward to 2020.
It's a pleasure to be here. I love making this podcast, and it's really a joy to me. So thank you for putting up with my bullshit.
Absolutely. Hey, man, anytime. I love it. And a big thank you to all of our listeners and to the folks who wonderfully, very sweetly speak to me and Jude on Twitter. Thank you.
Yeah.
We love you guys, and we just really appreciate it. And we hope that you continue to get stuff out of this podcast.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much. And we wish you a very happy and healthy new year. Good luck in 2020, you bastards. And with that, I guess we'll sign off.
The road may go ever on, but this episode is over.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Come on, it helps increase our visibility. You can find us on the web at www.podcast.atherbeth.com. You can find the show on Twitter at @atherbeth_cast. My pal Jude can be found at @AremiticJude, and I can be found at @TheNorth4. Title music is Lord of the Devil Rings by Pony Music, courtesy of Pond 5. Thanks again and Happy New Year.
Thank you.